Live from our nation's capital, it's the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Good afternoon, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop from Washington. I'm your host, Mark Levine, reporting live from the Center for American Progress in Washington, D.C. Happy holidays, everyone. Merry Christmas in a couple days. I've just enjoyed the holiday of Hanukkah. Whether you practice any other religion or no religion, I wish everyone a happy new year. My guest today, Jack Jenkins, the senior religion reporter for Think Progress. I've invited to talk about religion and politics. With the holidays around the corner, even what you call the holidays has become a political question. And with people running, particularly in the Republican Party, and trying to prove each one, I guess, a little bit holier than thou, each reaching out the evangelical Christian vote, I thought I would try to analyze what is it about religion that works in politics, what doesn't work in politics, and how is it specifically that clearly a very intelligent man like Ben Carson, I assume you have to be smart in order to separate babies' brains, can be so woefully misinformed on so many issues? Could it have to do with his religious faith? We'll find out. Jack Jenkins, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for coming on. So let me, before we get to Ben Carson specifically, let me just generally talk about religion and politics. Really, there's only been one non-Protestant president. That was John F. Kennedy. And even that was a huge deal that he was Catholic some 50 years ago. It's interesting to me that at least in the Republican Party, people look at your religion and make judgments about who you are and whether or not you should be president based on your religion.
Yeah.
You agree?
It's been around. Go ahead.
No, just you agree.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. It's been around for quite some time that, you know, particularly in the Republican Party, but really in American politics writ large, that religion has played a role in presidential elections. Sometimes it plays a larger role than others. So, you know, for instance, in John F. Kennedy's election, the fact that he was Catholic was a really big deal. That was something that hadn't really happened before, that we hadn't had a non-Protestant president. Interestingly, when Mitt Romney was running for president in 2012...
As a Mormon.
There wasn't as much talk. Yeah, he's Mormon, but in some ways it was less discussed than, say, religion has been discussed in this year's election. So it ebbs and flows, but it's never not been a part of American politics, either on the right and also on the left. You know, religion comes up for progressives and liberals as well. So it's just a part of our political.
Does it still come up? I mean, obviously there was a time, again, thinking back 50 years ago, Martin Luther King was, of course, a pastor, and there was the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, indeed, to be civil rights and African-American 50 years ago. The only place you could meet to talk about things was in the church. It was kind of the only safe haven where you wouldn't be arrested for getting together a bunch of black people and talking about politics. But is religion still play a role on the left today in 2015?
It does and it doesn't. It does not play the same role that you see in a Republican Party. You know, there's elements of, you have to posture to entire religious constituencies in the Republican Party. The religious right still exists. There's still certain, theological rings that one needs to kiss to be able to, like, be a part of this conversation. But like, on the left, there are still definitely deeply religious groups. I mean, you can't. Certain parts of Hispanic populations, certain parts of historic black populations, you need to be able to talk about God in some capacity, even if it means that you're admitting that someone is irreligious. So, for instance, Bernie Sanders went and spoke to Liberty University, not with hopes of winning over Liberty University. I don't think that, you know, this deeply evangelical college, but Bernie was able to basically state that, you know, his connection to his own faith is in some ways distant, but he's able to recognize the value of faith in certain people's lives. But to your point, that's a different conversation than you're having in the Republican Party right now, or sometimes it's who can be the most religious.
Well, let's talk about that.
Yeah,
I'm going to drill down and Ben Carson in a second, but let me just go to some of the other candidates first. So in terms of who's going out to get that religious vote, one would think that preacher Mike Huckabee, who really is a preacher, would be doing much better, or Rick Santorum has very much tried to reach out to the religious community. Both, I think, have completely failed. It looks to me like it's Ted Cruz or Ben Carson going for the evangelical vote. Is there anyone else that has any chance?
No, and it's actually been interesting about that dynamic. In some ways, the something that's happening in the Republican Party right now is that there used to be these kingmakers in evangelicalism, you know, really influential.
Jerry Falwell, for example,
leaders.
Pat Robertson.
Exactly. And there used to be an element to which they could say, look, you know, we should really talk about this candidate. They couldn't necessarily endorse, although sometimes they effectively would. But they would cozy up to one candidate and people would flock to them. That's not what's necessarily happening this year. So you had, you know, for instance, Russell Moore, who has, he's head of the Southern Baptist Convention's political arm. This is the largest, you know, Protestant denomination in the country, and it's within the realm of evangelicalism. And he's come out hard against Donald Trump, like very, very hard. And yet, we have Donald Trump, who still is being able to accrue a lot of evangelical Christian support. So
I was going to get to the Donald in a second. Yeah. I mean, the Donald seems to me, and I call him by that the Donald because it's amusing, and two, because he's kind of a force of nature, for good largely for ill. But it seems to me that the Donald is one of the most is one of the least religious and indeed almost mocking of religion as any candidate that's run for president that I can recall in my lifetime. I mean, it's wink, wink, nod, nod. You folks know that I don't give a damn about religion. All my religion's money. And yet, is he actually winning significant evangelical supporters?
Yes. It's flummoxing to a lot of people in the evangelical right. I mean, he's been asked to answer foundational theological questions and has failed miserably. He has, they asked him whether or not he asked God for forgiveness, and his effective answer was, why would I have to do that? I haven't done anything wrong.
Oh, no. So, oops. Yeah, someone doesn't understand anything about Christianity who says that.
Exactly. He's like, I don't need to bring God into that conversation because he doesn't anything wrong.
I can't imagine if a Democrat had done that. I mean, if a Democrat had done that, they would be fried on all the right wing sources. I mean, they would be crucified. Pardon the pun.
Yeah. it would have been a very different situation. His imperviousness to, you know, what otherwise would have been things that took down other candidates is pretty impressive. And also, he frequently on the campaign trail says, I'm Presbyterian, and what he means by that is the Presbyterian Church USA, which is actually a very deeply liberal denomination by most evangelical standards, who, by the way, they had one of the main officers of that denomination, one of the two leading officials that run it, has issued a public letter to him asking him to stop talking about...
please don't call yourself Presbyterian!
And one of the churches in his home, like what's called a presbytery, I think like a diocese, has asked if there's a way to like reevaluate his membership.
Yeah, like, I don't think they have excommunication in Presbyterianism. But so give me the state of the vote right now. It seems to me that Ben Carson was the evangelical choice, and now it's transmorphing into Ted Cruz. Is that right? And where are the percentages, at least in the evangelical community right now?
Yes, it seems like so. There was a time period earlier this year when some of the evangelical support that Trump had accrued started to shift over to Ben Carson, and there was some undecided evangelical votes that started to shift Ben Carson's way, and he enjoyed that for a while. But through a confluence of events, you can kind of pick which one of his many gaffes that decided to start to hurt Ben Carson's rise. Ted Cruz appears to have risen back and with evangelical support. His recent poll in Iowa, where he's beating Donald Trump, was the big. It was clear that those were coming from evangelical circles.
Now when I look at Ben Carson and Ted Cruz, when I see Ben Carson, I see a deeply flawed individual, but someone who appears At least he, I mean, he's soft-spoken. He appears humble, whether he is or not, given that he doesn't want a Muslim to be president. I don't know. But he, let's just say he appears sincere. The man appears, even though I think he's lying about the belt book, it's weird because it's an appearance. I'm not saying he actually is sincere. Whereas Ted Cruz reminds me of a used car salesman in the worst possible way. And I don't mean, and I really do not mean to insult used car salesmen because most of them are honest bunches. But to me, he exudes oil. He's unctuous. He's smarmy. I can think of so many words to describe. Ted Cruz strikes me, or a snake oil salesman perhaps is a better analogy. I cannot believe that anything he says is actually in his heart. He strikes me as someone who's very carefully playing politics and exuding religiosity with the same fervor which he'd wrap a piece of bacon around an automatic weapon, a semi-automatic weapon, and fry the bacon on his gun. Am I the only one who sees it this way? I mean, I am a Democrat, obviously. Do Republicans really attracted to Ted Cruz?
Yeah, and I think part of it is, despite all the things that I think there have been several conversations that I've had anecdotally and pieces that have been written where there's not uniform excitement within even like the religious right about any one particular candidate. So to your point, you know, yeah, people do talk a lot about Ben Carson's humility, at least relative to the rest of the Republican, slate of candidates right now. But Ben Carson, he started his campaign at Liberty University. That's where he announced that he was running for president. That was a none too subtle nod to that constituency, saying, "Look, I'm this person who fights for quote unquote religious liberty. I'm going to like cite the Bible as often as I can." And while
he seems perfect for that crowd, isn't he?
I mean, in terms of, to your point, I don't think his personality is perfect for that crowd, but in terms of policy, yeah, he checks a lot of boxes for what the average fan of Liberty University would enjoy in a presidential candidate.
But why not his personality? Is it that for all the Christian talk of humility, humility is actually not that attractive in a presidential candidate?
I think it is. I think at the end of the day, there's another thing going on here, which is that regardless of whether or not it's invented or not, a lot of people in the Christian right feel that they're embattled at the moment. They feel that the forces of secular America are slowly encroaching on the space that they've had, that would, quote unquote, take away their rights. Regardless of whether or not that has any viability or is in any way real, that is a sentiment that evangelicals are feeling right now. And so while they certainly like Ben Carson to some degree, you could make the argument that Ted Cruz feels more like an attack dog, a champion for their causes in the public square, more so than Ben Carson.
What happened to Mike Huckabee? I mean, he's the preacher candidate, right?
Yeah, that's a really good question about what happened to Mike Huckabee.
He won Iowa, didn't he? I think 4 years ago or 8 years ago. I forget when.
He won it. The Huckaboom, it was called at the time.
Oh, the Huckaboom. Yes, I missed that. I missed the Huckaboom.
And so it is a good question because he is the best suit for the traditional religious right. He is a pastor himself. He says all the right things, et cetera, et cetera.
He was out there with the crazy woman from Kentucky who didn't want to marry gay couples. Yeah. Basically, she's like, "I'm going to disobey the law," and he's right there with her. I mean, disobeying the law as a presidential candidate, you can't get more evangelical than that. What happened?
Actually, he actually beat out Ted Cruz there. Ted Cruz tried to show up, and Mike Huckabee.
They had a race.
Him out.
It was the most amazing race. Huckabee got there first. Maybe Arkansas is closer to Kentucky than Texas. Maybe that's it. I don't know.
Fair point. And I think that it comes down to there is some element of logic in a primary system where a lot of voters tend to gravitate towards someone they think can win. And Huckabee has, attempted several times to run for president and has been unsuccessful. So I think there might be strong sentiment of appreciation for Huckabee, but not a belief that he's going to win the White House at the end of the day.
His 15 seconds of fame is over. Poor Mike Huckabee. I don't really have much sympathy for any of the Republican candidates, but hey, that's me. Let's take a break, folks. We'll be right back with more of the Inside Scoop right after this. Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. This is my last show before Christmas, and I want to wish everyone a Merry Christmas if you celebrate the holiday. If you don't, then you can Happy Hanukkah, Happy Kwanzaa, or just Happy New Year, everybody. That's one thing that all of us have in common. As we approach the holidays, which some say is more a celebration of materialism than it is of God, I thought it was interesting to note the role religion plays in American politics today. Obviously, in the past, you can look back and talk about William Jennings Bryan, the fiery preacher on the plains that stood up for the common man, or Abraham Lincoln's prayer of thanksgiving, or Thomas Jefferson, the deist, right? The guy who pretty much penned the First Amendment and cared about the separation of church and state, or John F. Kennedy, who was the first Catholic to run 50 years ago. As my guest, Jack Jensen, the senior religion reporter for Think Progress, points out, and I thought it was a good point, almost no one made mention of the fact that Mitt Romney is a Mormon 4 years ago when he ran against Barack Obama. And, of course, there are many, many more Catholics in the United States than there are Mormons. Mormonism, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, is still seen as somewhat unusual religious practice. They have a number of practices that differ in sharpness from most Christian sects, S-E-C-T-S. And indeed, some Christians argue that Mormons aren't Christian. None of this theological debate was heard. And so I'm wondering if America is getting post-religion. But then you look at the Republican candidates, you look at people like Ted Cruz and Ben Carson, even Mike Huckabee, and there is still a power, at least in the Republican Party, among evangelical voters. Ironically, the same voters that once turned out for Jimmy Carter, when he said he was a born-again Christian, even though Jimmy Carter was far left of today's Republican Party. So tell me, Jack, if you would, the evangelical voter, before Ronald Reagan, they were with Jimmy Carter. They largely went to Ronald Reagan, even though Ronald Reagan wasn't a particularly religious person. He spoke to their community, but he was hardly someone who went to church every week. Where they kind of build up their power with people like Jerry Falwell and Pat Robertson. Would you say that the evangelical Christian political movement is on the decline now?
In terms of raw ownership of American politics, yes. I mean, basically what happened, you get to go back. They had a spurt of politics in the early 20th century, the evangelical community did, and they lost. They actually lost to liberal Christians. And they disappeared from politics basically until the Red Scare. And during
they lost because of Prohibition, right? They opposed alcohol, and America was like, This isn't working. I mean, that was the big slap in the face for them. I just think it's important to point out why they lost. But go ahead. I'll tell you what, we got to take a break. We'll get to the Red Scare in a second. We have to take a break. Folks, you want to call in, it's 888-48-MARK, 888-48-6275. Talking about religion and politics. We'll be right back right after this. Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine, talking about the role that religion plays in politics today. Of course, to understand where, particularly in presidential politics, is mostly what we're focusing on, but to understand where we are today, we have to understand where we've come from. My guest is Jack Jensen. He is the senior religion reporter for Think Progress. Jack Jenkins. Jack, we were talking before the break how evangelicals did a major push during Prohibition, actually won that constitutional amendment, but when Prohibition failed, evangelical power largely failed as well, and then they became more powerful again in the 1950s. Tell me about that.
Well, they basically retreated from politics after, losing in the Prohibition fight, and also there was a fight over, but they also, but when Red happened, there was this, they patched the anti-converter to theology. They had
Jack, you're fading in and out a little bit. Are you on a cell phone? Can you get a little bit closer to the window or something? I want to hear you.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Sorry.
Is this better?
A little bit. Go ahead.
Yeah. So I
tell you what, Jack, we're having trouble. Okay, we're going to reconnect with you. I'll just talk until you get back. that's the reporter, Jack Jenkins. He's actually on vacation. It's very kind of him during his Christmas break to call in from South Carolina. And so, unfortunately, you know, sometimes the phones don't work as well as they should. We are talking about religion and politics, particularly in the presidential race, and why it has more of an impact today among conservatives than it does among liberals. There was a time we talked about where liberals, particularly in the civil rights movement, that the black church was the senior organizing principle of this great movement. Not so much now on the left, although there still is this view that religion matters. And in fact, if you ask Americans, would you elect a Christian as president? Of course, everyone says yes. Would you elect a Jewish person as president? About 90% say yes. If you ask if you'd elect a Muslim as president, the numbers go down to about 60-something percent. And this is the one that most surprised me of all. If you ask Americans if they would elect an atheist as president, someone who doesn't believe in God, it's even lower than the numbers that would vote for a Muslim. And I'm not sure why that should matter. Why should a person's faith in God or lack of faith in God have anything to do with their public policy? Why wouldn't we judge them based on what they will do or whether you trust them or not? Well, I guess that's the heart of it. That's the heart of it, right? It's not just a question of what a person's policies are, but whether you trust the person to implement those policies. And the answer is, and this concerns me in a country that has separation of church and state under the First Amendment, I think their answer is that Americans, many of them, a huge number of us, just don't trust atheists. It's interesting as to why that would be. What it is about faith in God that causes Americans to trust someone more, even if they believe in a different God or concept of God from our own. Americans seem to be okay with that. They understand that you can have a different conception of God, but to not believe in God is still considered a death knell in politics. So that's one of the questions I want to ask Jack when he comes back. Andrew, we got him, or are we still working on him?
Still working on it.
Okay. All right, that's fine. Tell you what, let's take an early break, Andrew. That way we'll give you time to get him, and then we'll have a really long segment coming up. So let's take an early break. We'll be right back with more of the Inside Scoop while we get our guest on the phone and a nice clear signal right after this. Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. My guest is Jack Jenkins. He's the senior religion reporter for Think Progress. And Jack, we're told that your phone is much better now.
Yeah.
Oh, good.
Hopefully it's coming through loud and clear.
That's good, because if I can't hear you, it just doesn't make for good radio. So you're explaining that in the 1950s, the evangelicals got more political power again. What was that about?
Basically, you know, they tied a theological, you know, idea of a Christian country and a Christian United States to, you know, the Red Scare, the opposition to communism, which was deemed at the time to be a godless place.
So the opposition to communism was not the gulags. It was not Stalin's murder of millions of people. It was the fact that it was an atheist culture. That was the main reason to oppose it.
Right. I mean, you know, they would attach any sort of bad thing that communism did to the fact that it was also an atheist culture. See, so anything bad that communism did was largely because they were godless. That's one of the arguments that would be made.
Are we still suffering from this today? I mean, one of the polls that I cited while we were working on your phone was that virtually every American would vote for a Christian as president. 90% of Americans would vote for a Jewish person as president. The numbers go way down to the 60s if it's a Muslim American running for president. But the lowest is not the Muslims. The lowest is atheists, which only a bare majority of Americans would even consider voting for an atheist. What's the cause of that? Is that because of that old Red Scare, or is there something deeper here?
I think it really it's part of the same reason the Red Scare worked is part of the reason that you see that. It is the most difficult thing to be if you want to be a candidate is to be an atheist in large parts of the country. It is one of the least representative constituencies in American politics. And it's basically if you're an atheist, you're going to have a hard time in two places in those polls. One is getting elected to office, and two is letting anyone date your son or their son or daughter.
But there are more atheists than Jews or Muslims. I mean, it's what, right. 15-20% of the country is atheist. And yet, I mean, I guess because they don't, you know, it's not like race where you can see it on your skin. Atheists are, I guess, a hated minority in America still. Is that fair?
And it's an interesting thing because I think the general gist on behalf of the people who respond that way is religion in general gives you a moral compass. And the idea is that if you don't have religion, then you don't have a moral compass. And this is why there's been a lot of work done in atheist humanist communities. You know, the book Good Without God by Greg Epstein, you know, who's Harvard's humanist chaplain, they're trying to combat this idea that if you are a-religious or if you're agnostic, that somehow you just are just morally destitute.
You know, I could think of a bunch of horrible, horrific things that atheist movements have done, but I can also think of a number of horrible, horrific things that religious movements have done. ISIS and the Crusades come to mind very quickly. So, you know, we can have a murdering contest, but in terms of evil, I would say it knows both religion and a religion.
Right. And I think just what seems plainly obvious to you is less obvious to many average Americans.
So is the view is that they can't trust an atheist, that they're just going to go off the deep end and suddenly start, I don't know, throwing virgins into pits? No, I guess that's a religious thing. Excuse me. No, but what is the fear?
I really do think it comes down to, and this is both from, you know, research I've done, and there's some new research on a-religious communities. Basically, one of the things that pushes folks into this really defensive position is the idea that it's a construct for a person's life that they don't understand. They grew up in a church or in a synagogue or in a mosque, and that's what informed them on their worldview, and they can't imagine somebody who wouldn't go, you know, to temple on Saturday
or to mosque
on Friday.
The majority of Americans don't, maybe I'm wrong here, but I believe the majority of Americans don't go to church every week or mosque or synagogue. The majority, am I wrong? Do the majority of Americans?
There's a few different skewed polling than that, but there's actually
that skewed polling of people try to claim that they do even when they don't, I guess.
Yes, that's kind of where the discrepancy is, that how many folks claim they go to church, how many folks actually go to church. You can ask your average pastor and they'll tell you there's a big difference. But
if you poll people on whether they have above average or below average intelligence, it's amazing how many more than 50% of Americans have are way above average. But anyway, go ahead.
It really comes down to, even if they don't go to church, there's this, you see, this is part of what fueled the Red Scare. It's this feeling of being superior to another group of people. It's like one of the things you hold on to as a human being is like, oh, well, I'm going to be better than this other group. And that fear is really deep, where that you only have a very slim majority of Americans who will be willing to vote for someone who is an atheist, because that's just not something that they're used to working with. It's not something that even if they probably, if they ask some of their friends, would find out that many of them are atheists or agnostics. It's just not something that's accepted in our society yet. And it is this new movement to try to, like, have big public conversations about how you can be, according, you know, to quote Greg Epstein's book again, good without God.
So let's circle back to Ben Carson here. There is this Christian myth or teaching, I should say, of the prodigal son. The prodigal son is the wayward son, the person that people love to apply to George W. Bush because apparently he was on cocaine and an alcoholic, and then suddenly at age 40, he gave it all up and became a good Christian. And there's this feeling that if you've been wayward, if you've gone way afield and you come back and you've, you know, sought forgiveness and God has forgiven you by grace, and that you're actually even a better person than the person who never strayed. And this is a very fervent belief of this forgiveness, the power of forgiveness. I'm curious if Ben Carson might have made up the worst of his past, you know, the idea that he stabbed somebody, but it magically hit the belt buckle that apparently stopped his knife. Almost, I can almost see God stopping Abraham from killing Isaac. I mean, that kind of drama in Ben Carson's story, that God magically stopped the knife from killing him. He wept, apparently in the bathroom, and then changed and became the prodigal son. This story, to me, has a lot of resonance in Christian philosophy, even though it may not be true.
Right, and that's, since I wrote my piece on Ben Carson about his religious beliefs, there's been a lot of doubt cast on the validity of that story. Several people who went to school with him were perplexed by his description of himself as this, rage-induced, filled child. The idea that they can't find who the actual person, whether it was a friend or a family member, was that he supposedly tried to stab. But to your point, that story, irrespective of whether it's true, is one that he's going to keep telling because it plays so well, particularly with evangelical audiences, where the idea of a redeemed human being is incredibly popular. There's lots and lots of pastors who have mega churches who their story is, I was a fallen sinner and then I found God. I was a drug addict. I was just this heretic person. And then when I found Jesus, I came back from it. And that, like you said, gives them more credibility. So the fact that Ben Carson can tell that story to these evangelical audiences has played really well and will probably continue to play well because it doesn't look like he's going to back down from telling it.
So tomorrow's Christmas Eve. The next day is Christmas Day. Millions, tens of millions, probably hundreds, almost certainly hundreds of millions of Americans will spend lots of time with their family and their extended relatives. And there's three things they say you're never supposed to discuss at those family gatherings: religion, race, or politics. So I'm going to break convention and combine all three in this question. Is it that Ben Carson's story of the prodigal son, of redemption from a life of violence into a life of do-gooding and, a doctor that heals and so forth, does his story have more power because, yes, he is black, and there is this image in many white evangelicals' minds of blacks as being violent and that, he's escaping from this violent past?
I do think, I think that criticism has been raised about whether or not, him telling the story the way that he tells this story is effectively trying to establish a bridge between, black communities and conservative white communities over this line, and whether or not it has racial overtones. And I do think it's you can look at polling. There is, racism still exists as a component of conservative populations and, a lot of just America writ large.
Right.
And because they have this common parlance in a lot of, African-American communities and these white evangelical communities of Jesus, they can have, his story does try to say, hey, I've reformed from this, and if you were a skittish, casually racist conservative, you could make the same conclusion that you just outlined, which is that, he's not like the
other.
He's
a good black person.
Yeah, and I think that is that. There's a lot of work to be done to kind of analyze Ben Carson's candidacy, because I think there is a lot of stuff in there about how you could draw out what the racial dynamics are and how they're directly tied to religion and how he talks about it. So I think
let's
be on to something, and other folks haven't explicitly polled on that.
Well, I that's why, like I said, I'm someone who's going to talk about the three topics you're not allowed to talk about over with your family. Go ahead, ask your family whether the Ben Carson story has anything to do with race, religion, or politics. Watch the sparks fly. I think it'll be fun. But my question, I guess, is to compare this black man with another black man or half black man who happens to be president of the United States, Barack Hussein. Yes, that's his middle name, Obama, who is seen as almost satanic among evangelicals. The way they talk about him, it's not just that gun sales have gone through the roof, but when I talk with particularly evangelical Republicans, and this is a guy, Barack Obama, who stabbed no one, by his own account, where the worst thing he did is he admits he tried marijuana, which I dare say virtually all the presidential candidates have. I mean, this is a guy who grew up in Indonesia, does not at all, I mean, his father's African, he's not even African-American. He does not at all play into the stereotype of the black man that evangelicals generally play to, and yet he is somehow Satan incarnate. how does this happen? Is it that is he educated? I mean, Ben Carson is educated. What about Obama makes him the devil, other than the fact that he happens to be liberal?
I mean, that's a good question. I mean, I always remember reflect back and conversations I had and very public conversations, criticisms of Obama in 2008, where they'd say, he's actually a secret Muslim, and you'd say, no, he actually has a pastor. I'm like, yeah, I heard about his crazy pastor. And you're like, wait,
crazy Christian pastor who's a secret Muslim. I mean, it's like at least get your story straight if you're gonna hate the guy.
The undercurrent there, but a lot of people have written about there is a racial dynamic to the criticism of Barack Obama. I think that's kind of hard to ignore. But to your question, what is the distinguishing factor between Barack Obama and
they're both educated black men.
I spend my time writing about religion. I spend my time writing about the influence of religion, and it can shape our politics. But on most polls, when it comes down to how you identify and how you see the world and what impacts your vote, the single most impacting thing isn't necessarily your religion, it's party affiliation. So at the end of the day, there does seem to be, while you will have deep racial dynamics, even within the Republican field, they would rather have someone, if you were a racist Republican, you would rather vote for a Republican than you would ever vote for a Democrat.
Okay, well, but look, I completely understand Republicans choosing Republicans and Democrats choosing Democrats. There's a reason we have the ideology of the party we're in, and many Americans are independents. That doesn't surprise me that a Republican votes against Obama. That's nothing wrong with that. That's
right.
as American as apple pie. The thing that I find so surprising, and I don't remember them doing this with Bill Clinton. They certainly talked about his, sexual dalliances and things like that. Although I guess there were some. There are people that accused him, I remember, of murdering Vince Foster. So like, there were people off the loony bin.
Right.
But it does seem that they portray Obama not as a liberal with whom we disagree, but as some kind of, satanic force or secret Muslim, or he's going to confiscate our guns. but is it worse, or am I just misremembering the Clinton years because they certainly hated him too?
Oh, no, I would argue that, just from a pure religious perspective, the kinds of things like, calling Barack Obama the Antichrist, putting
right.
on him. I would argue that just from as a person who writes about religion and politics, it is far more vitriolic and infused with religious imagery when talking about Barack Obama.
What causes that?
Is it
racism or is it something deeper? Am I missing something?
I think part of it is. I mean, you led off this segment by referring to the fact that evangelicals voted for Jimmy Carter.
Right. And very liberal man, but born again Christian.
Exactly. And in fact, in some ways, he's more liberal than a whole section of the Democratic Party right now.
I think he's more liberal than Barack Obama, to be sure.
Yeah, and on probably several issues. And so there is a tendency for people to find kinship with those who are like them. And Barack Obama, if you're the average white evangelical conservative Christian in the United States, he's a different race than you. He comes from a different, probably educational background, generally speaking.
Let me suggest something else. It's not just that he's a black man who went to Harvard.
I do think his religious views are, the way he talks about religion isn't an evangelical terminology. He talks about religion like a mainline Christian does, which is
we've had many Presbyterian and Episcopal presidents, so they can't be that. Let me suggest to you that the fact that Barack Obama's father is African rather than African American, he is not a descendant of slaves. The fact that his mother raised him in Indonesia, the fact that his middle name is Hussein because his grandfather apparently was a Muslim man in Africa, or at least had the Muslim name, that these elements, when people say that Barack Obama is foreign born, everyone with any sense knows he was born in Hawaii, and Hawaii is part of the United States and was when he was born. But this idea that he's too new, he's first generation, and his first generation is farther afield than even a guy like Ted Cruz, who's born in Canada of a Cuban parent, that Cuba is not seen as foreign as Africa or Indonesia. I'll just throw that out there. Jack, we got to end. Sorry, it's been a great discussion. I want everyone to have whatever religion you celebrate, whatever holiday you celebrate, have a fantastic time with your family. Enjoy it. These are the moments to savor. This is Mark Levine, and I'll talk to you next week.